Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Like callers might have to actually listen to the show and stay on topic for once. That would be wild.
No, that's okay. I mean, they can change the topic, just not while we have our guests on. So the number
Fair.
Here is 603-283-6160, and he is a guest who I have been asking to come on the show for some time now. And he hasn't done it because of, well, legal circumstances. Probably partially because of our legal circumstances.
Sure.
Partially probably because of his legal circumstances. All of them involving the federal government gang. Jeremy Kaufman is with us, the founder and the creator of Library, and I think partial founder of Odyssey back in the day. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hey, it is always great to talk to you, although the circumstances might not be great. And I do also want to apologize to your listeners. I mean, forcing them to stay on topic just seems really rude.
Well, that's all right. They'll get over it.
Yeah, I think they can manage it this once.
Okay.
So, welcome back to the show. I know we've had you on at some points in the past, but I feel like it's been a couple years since that's happened. You got tied up in all kinds of ridiculous legal chains back around the same time we did. It was March of 2021, shortly after the FBI raided this studio in the Crypto 6 situation. I think it was, within a week or so. You got delivered paperwork from the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, saying they were taking Library, the company that you created, to court.
That's right. Well, we've been under investigation for 5 years. We're at the 5-year anniversary.
And me too. It took them 5 years to investigate us as well.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. It's kind of the worst. Like, it's like one of the worst parts of it. Because our circumstances are very different, and honestly, it's actually I see what you've been going through, and I'm like, because I've been kind of like, oh, this sucks, man. I'm like this is awful. This is like the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And then at the same time, of course, you're going through your situation, which honestly is worse. I mean, I'm losing a lot of money. I'm going to be losing a lot of years of my life. I mean, it's going to continue, but I think, you know, there's been a lot of economic damage to myself, to the people who work at the company, to the people involved in the project. Like, it's going to continue in some form. They may force it to shift forms, you know. Some of that's still unclear, so I don't want to go too deep into that aspect of it specifically.
Yeah, but
you're
losing something that you love, something that you created, and something that you dedicated a huge portion
know,
of your
Ian,
life.
I can't do woe is me to you.
And what?
You can't say woe is me.
I can't do it to you. It does suck. It does suck. I've been sad about it. And like, it feels, I think, you and I are both free staters and Aria too. And I imagine a lot of your audience, is or prospective, free state. If they're not free staters yet, they're free state sympathetic, you know? And we get it. But like, you know, you saw the same thing in your case and I see the same thing as mine. It's like, you know, the amount of the people's ability to like sort of defend and prop up the system, like even while being apologetic about it, it's like, well, just stop, you know, just stop. Like, but we have a nature that, you know, it's different. I mean, all of us, not, you know, when I say we, all of us with this kind of liberty inclination, because, you know, to other people, like they kind of do see us as the bad guy, you know, and we of course see ourselves as as, you know, principled as trying to, you know, to do this thing. And of course, I agree with us.
Sure.
I agree with us. But it's like, that's, you know, that's, I don't know, that's the reality. That's the reality of it, you know?
It is sad to see how many people, you know, just automatically take the side of the federal government in anything that happens. You know, the SEC is going at your library. Oh, a library must have done something wrong, is what the average person out there seems to think.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, even, but even you saw, you were there, you know, in the job.
LRN.FM.
You can't say that, dude. We're on broadcast radio, so I had to hit the dump button on you. And go ahead.
I understand how that button works. And so the government is clearly screwing us, and I will be on target. I flip that switch. You know, the government was clearly, you know, screwed. And the judge knew, right? Like, the judge understood what the SEC was doing. And he was sitting there in court, like, SEC, you know, I'm not, you know, but the judge, this is what's, this is, and for liberty, you know, it can be hard. And you may be surprised. I actually have sympathy for the judge. I don't have that much sympathy for the SEC enforcement officers. Like, I think they're legitimately bad people. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of discretion, right? The judge is bought in to this idea of the system and how it works. And he is a smart guy, and he's a thoughtful guy. Like, he's not a partisan. Like, he can think, you know, he can take the perspective of others and so on. But the system that he has been put within, he has a lot of respect for, and he sees himself as having a certain role within it. And so the SEC, who's acting, you know, effectively psychopathically, sociopathically, like, they do not see themselves as beholden by any principles or set of rules. Like, they see themselves as like, well, how can we, you know, hurt these people that we don't like, or how can we accomplish these ends regardless of principles, regardless of means, regardless of anything beyond that? You know, and they're just taking advantage of the judge. And the judge, he gets it. He knows. He understands. But can't bring himself to, like, correct the government at the same time. Or can't bring himself to push. The SEC is taking advantage of the judge because the SEC is saying, no, judge, legally, only answer this very, very narrow question. And the judge has seen all this other stuff. And he goes, SEC, I know what you're doing. And the SEC is like, well, judge, your job is to decide this very narrow question.
And what is that question for our listeners that weren't at the hearing yesterday?
Yeah, so, I mean, and we were found guilty of what's called a Section 5 violation, an unregistered securities offering. It's a civil offense, and it means that we sold an investment contract, a security, without following the proper, you know, regulatory rules and procedures. And in our case, there's no, you know, there's been no victim. No one went to the government and said that they were harmed. But the government effectively believes that almost all crypto asset sales are securities offerings. In our case, the judge ruled, due to this specific combination of facts of owning a substantial amount of the crypto asset and working on it and selling it, that those things combine, you know, make the sale, specifically very much hinging on having, depending on the portion of that you hold, but specifically on working on it, holding it, and selling it, that that's a securities offering.
It seems so strange to me that could be the determining factor on what is and isn't a security, but this is where it gets into areas that are so far beyond my understanding because it deals with all of these complicated financial definitions and legal definitions that I do not even begin to understand.
Yeah. So LRN.FM.
Hang on there. You got to remember here.
That's
broadcast radio. You can't say that one.
Okay, I
can't say that one.
All right, I gotta refer.
Just think of the Carlin 7 dirty words. I don't know if you're familiar with that skit.
I am. But that's not what I thought. That wasn't one of them.
Yeah, right, I'm pretty sure that one's on there.
The good
news is our listeners on Odyssey are able to hear the uncensored version of the show tonight.
That's right. So follow Free Talk Live on on Odyssey. Securities law is one of those things, and the SEC generally is one of those things where the government, you know the way bureaucracies work, your listeners know, they're cancer, right? Whatever they can do, they grow however they can, without cause, without reason. And the SEC has been one of the most successful cancers in terms of government agencies. And securities law is like, might as well be the commerce clause of, in terms of how the SEC has been able to do this. And, you know, And so the SEC is like, for example, right now, they're becoming the EPA with a lot of their – they're forcing these companies to do all of this various environmental reporting, and they're saying, no, you have to do this, you know, to do right by the market, and if you don't do it, you'll be afoul of securities law. They've managed to make securities law everything is securities fraud.
So they're shoehorning as much as they possibly can into this, whatever this definition was that Congress put down at some point. They're saying, oh yeah, that qualifies, and that qualifies too. And they're just putting everything they can in front of a judge. And of course, the judges typically do the bidding of the federal government, no matter how thoughtful or whatever they might be. That tends to be the direction things go. And so, and we've seen that in the Crypto 6 case where, you know, some judge in a previous case said Bitcoin is quote unquote funds, even though it shouldn't meet the definition of funds or money or whatever. It's just some judge who doesn't understand the technology said something at some point. And so now every other judge that hears a Bitcoin related case looks to that previous judge and says, well, this other judge said Bitcoin was funds, so Bitcoin is therefore funds, even though it's never even been addressed by Congress.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're very smart about it, too. I mean, like, the SEC is artfully going around and doing this sort of, like, carving, this very careful carving of, like, just advancing, 5, 10, 15%, and then going to judges and being like, well, like, look, this is just a little bit different, and they're going to eat the whole thing until hopefully eventually a judge will shut them down, because honestly, I have more faith in a judge doing it than Congress. Like, I do. I'm not saying a judge is going to, but like, the idea of Congress fixing it feels even worse. So,
from the point of view of the SEC, it makes perfect sense. You know, they're a government bureaucracy. They're full of power-hungry bureaucrats, power-hungry little tyrants who want more control over other people, but they're limited in their power. They can only regulate the world of securities. So what they want to do is they want to take a bigger and bigger chunk of the world and somehow shoehorn it into falling under the definition of security. Which, as we talked about, you know, when the ruling was initially made in this case, that essentially everything can be a security according to this ruling, including like Pokemon cards, Magic the Gathering cards, and it sounds like the judge attempted to address this.
They are. If the SEC wanted to go into court and argue that Magic the Gathering cards were securities, they could.
As long as wouldn't it require someone at like Wizards of the Coast or whatever to say, hey, if you buy this new Magic the Gathering set, it might go up in value over time. That's what they would argue would be the security aspect of it.
So Wizards is hyper cognizant of this issue, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So they will literally never, ever mention the dollar value of a card on any official media, on any official acknowledgement, on anything. They were running, they ran this series where they opened very old cards, you know, cards with like thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. These cards
are worth
if you open the right one, right? these old black ones. I don't even know all the values or whatever, but like it's like five figures. And they're running a live stream, and like the players are opening these very, very valuable cards and this promotional thing. And all they'll say is, oh, that's a very collectible card right there. That one's very collectible. They will not ever acknowledge the secondary market because they are concerned of running afoul of these laws. But like, it's very easy to argue that they are. There's all this evidence. For example, there's a ton of evidence that they're obviously aware of the prices, and they number crunch the prices, and they understand how there's the secondary market and that it's in their business interests to keep the value of the assets in the secondary market at a higher price. But the SEC doesn't want to go after Wizards, right? They want to go after us, and they'll go after other people beyond us. But if you look at
Wizards is Hasbro, and they got a lot of lawyers on their side and a ton of money, and you guys not so much, right?
Well, I mean, I don't think that we got out lawyered necessarily. Maybe we did. I mean, they definitely were able to drain our resources and burden us in, you know, in process and you know, and various things, which they also, you know, they threatened to do. They absolutely behave, you know, nothing like that. There's any sort of, you know, justice seeking. They behave entirely as, you know, we're going to get you one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing there.
Well, even the judge at the hearing yesterday acknowledged, He said right out in court that the SEC has basically unlimited funding. They just get money from the taxpayers, and they can just keep on going as long as they need to go, and you, on the other side, runs out of cash at some point.
Right, that's right. He makes all these gestures. He'll talk about all these things. And if you heard what he was saying, right, there was some audience applause to a couple of things, or at least some mild cheering to some of the things he was saying. But of course, but what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
He's just agreeing with the government, nearly 100%. And
there was somebody who said that she loved the judge, and I was surprised by that. I was like, wait, did you forget that this judge ruled against Library and is going to destroy them? I mean, the only question now is how bad will the destruction be? How far will they disgorge you, to the point that we know Library is already essentially taking its last breath. The question is, are they going to slice you with a knife at the very end,
Honestly, that's not even the issue. And I struggle even to get my own counsel to understand this, because my counsel is always like, well, we're going to get, hey, look, we got this minimum, but it's not that, right? It's about, to be a business, to be a successful business, other businesses need to be able to work with you. And the SEC has created this complete climate of terror where every company, every entity, even non-US entities, like we had an Israeli vendor that we literally work with only outside of the U.S. that we lost as a result of the SEC case.
Wow.
Because guess what? Even
I'm
if you're in Israel, the SEC is going to contact you. By the way, they did. The SEC subpoenaed this Israel vendor, and Israel has to comply with U.S. subpoenas because whatever, they want to be friendly with the U.S.
Wow.
And they cost that company probably $100,000 or several hundred thousand dollars because it's the SEC, like, they don't care. They'll just be like, give us this and 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 this. They have no, conscience of what they're forcing you to generate.
And you mentioned starting
they do it on purpose.
Sorry. You mentioned starting a business, though, and the only thing an entrepreneur should have to have is a good idea and the ability to turn that idea into reality. But when it comes to the SEC, you also have to jump through all of the hoops that they put for without telling you where the hoops are or what they consist of.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. I mean, they won't answer a single question positively. We went in there. We said we'd change anything. The outcome that we're getting, we offered to the SEC 5 years ago, and they wouldn't take it. We said we'd destroy the company and give them all of our cryptocurrency. They wanted more than that.
Jesus, man.
But the problem is, even if the judge seems very willing to say, I'm only ruling on this narrow issue and, send all these signals that all this other stuff should still be okay, can be sold in exchanges. If you exchange it to someone else, it's all completely legal. The problem is that's not the way that a business is going to think of it. If you're an exchange, if you're an entity, you're thinking about drawing dealers, the question is, am I going to get an SEC subpoena?
Mm-hmm.
Not, am I complying with the law? This is a very important difference. Right? If the SEC or any government agency demonstrates continued animosity towards the business, I can't do business.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they just show they're going to harass anyone I do business with, why would anyone do business with me?
Right. Yeah, it's a chilling effect.
Yeah. But, and it's
and
rational. I'm not, attacking them. It's rational behavior on their part.
Do you see this affecting, you mentioned, exchanges. Do you see this affecting Library and Library credits going into the future, where it may be delisted or...
It already has been. This is the problem. I mean, so we got these strong signals yesterday from the judge. The judge said in court that secondary sales should not be considered securities. The question is, and by the way, this is an open question. There might have been enough in court. I don't, I can't model the way that they think exactly because I'm way more willing to push the envelope than obviously most people are. So I don't know what it's going to take. A Coinbase or a Kraken or a Binance US or whoever, or even just a Binance again, because US laws might as well be global. This is, it doesn't matter. So what's going to make them feel comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Was the judge's language strong enough that they're going to feel comfortable? Or are they just going to be why take the risk? And I don't know. I would, it'd be nice. And certainly, if there's any kind of pressure on them, any kind of encouragement, because they're going to keep, the SEC is going to keep coming, so I think this would be a nice one. It's a chance to kind of take a bit of a stand in a positive way where the judge has said, no, this should be okay. But because it wasn't before the court, he couldn't really rule on it in his, framework of thinking about things. That's the big question that we're facing, because if there's not enough, if everyone's just going to be chilled, then it's
right. I mean, it's the same issue we faced, you know, as the Crypto Six. They don't have to go after everyone who's ever sold cryptocurrency. They just have to go after enough, and they just have to make a big enough display of it where everyone else is just too scared to go near it. And that's,
yeah, you don't want this to happen to you.
Right, that's what they're attempting with Library.
And it's a huge problem, I mean, because also with the Crypto Six stuff, I mean, and this is the government's, the most important aspect of cryptocurrency for the whole thing to work is, you know, because you're not going to get away from, people aren't going to hard cut from fiat. So you need fiat to cryptocurrency exchange mechanisms that can remain anonymous, essentially, or, you know, less than full regulation. And I'm not saying that I think you guys were trying to do everything in compliance with the law, but like, we need the ability to convert those things in a cash-like way if cryptocurrency is going to succeed. Because if you're able to control all of the on and off ramps, you know,
that's the value of Coinbase actually, and Kraken and Binance and all of these others, is that they play ball with the government. So it sort of gives the government almost direct control to determine who gets to use cryptocurrency and who doesn't.
That's right. Right. Well, that's right. And because that's all KYC, that's all, like, the government has full insight to all of the transactions happening in all of those places. And I think those services serve a place. I'm not anti those services. But what's very, very, very important is that there also be the cash to crypto conversion possibilities and mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're able to cut that off and push everything or almost everything into the full, you know, KYC centralized credit card, you know, bank account, then you've lost the value. Because the whole point, and this is like a huge failure for Bitcoin, where everyone should have been like, how after 10 years, was like the Canadian trucker protest, where like the Canadian truckers were getting debanked and they weren't able to be like, oh, just send us Bitcoin. And why? Because if you're a Canadian and the Canadian government says you can't donate money to these people, then how do you do it? You have a credit card, you have a bank account, you're a normal law-abiding citizen. You're not a crypto anarchist, you're not in these circles, right? So how are you going to do it? Because if you just go to Coinbase and take out your credit card and buy Bitcoin and send it to the truckers, you might as well have written them a check.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jeremy, I feel like we're just getting this thing rolling here. Do you have time to stick with us for at least the rest of the hour?
I actually am pretty crunched tonight. I'm happy to come back. You know, I'm happy to talk more with you guys.
Yeah, because I suspect we got at least a couple callers on the line for you as well. You got to run now?
Let me take like one or two calls, and then I do have to go. I'm on like a crazy schedule right now. I do have to go, but I can come back on like, you know, in a couple of nights.
Can you stay through part of the next segment, or do you like need to cut out now?
Hold that thought, because we're up against the news here. Stand by. If you can stay, that's great. Just for a little bit, hang on here. More coming up here. Hopefully, if we can get Jeremy to stick with us for just a bit. We'll see if we can take these calls.
Maybe not, Jeremy. Thank you for Library.
Yeah, absolutely. We will definitely get you back on here. But the number is 603-283-6160. You can join the show here on Free Talk Live. We got Jeremy Kaufman with us from Library.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. No one was injured when an armed man entered a Target store in Omaha, Nebraska today and opened fire.
It's unknown at this time if he was firing at anybody. We did a search for any victims, customers, workers, because there were some people hiding in there. We could not find anybody that has been hurt.
Omaha police spokesman Todd Shamderer says police shot and killed the suspect. Near Boston, two people were shot inside a Dollar Tree store. It's the end of a flying era. Boeing delivering its final 747 jumbo jet today. The plane revolutionized travel by connecting international cities that had never before had direct routes. Over the last 15 years, Boeing and Airbus have introduced more profitable and efficient wide-body planes. And Wall Street closing with stocks higher to end the month. The Federal Reserve will end its two-day meeting tomorrow with another rate hike expected. John Schaefer, USA News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only 2 documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. If you want to join the show, you can. We're going to go open phones here in just a moment. Jeremy Kaufman did agree to stick around for just one call because we had one guy on the line who had a question for him here, and he's been waiting very patiently, so we're going to get right back to that. It's Ian and Aria in the studio tonight. Jeremy, the founder, the creator of Library, which we're not going to have time to get into, but I do want to have Jeremy back on to kind of talk about, you know, maybe what the future might look like, what kind of lessons were learned, because I know the Library account on Twitter has been posting about some lessons learned here, and I think that would be interesting to get on the air as well. But since you are short on time here tonight, Jeremy, thank you for sticking with us. Definitely appreciate it, and I want to bring our caller on the line here. David is in Georgia. David, you're on with Jeremy from Library.
Hey, two quick questions and a comment. The two quick questions are, why did you remain in the U.S., and why did you not remain anonymous? Because if Satoshi had asked for permission to create Bitcoin, we wouldn't have Bitcoin right now.
Sure, yeah, that's a good question. So I'll work backwards. Getting out of the U.S. wouldn't have helped anything at all, right? Because the United States government opinion is going to once they've got that their jaws into that, like, they're not going to let it go. They're going to continue to take the position that the sale of LDC is a security, and if we simply moved overseas, like, they would have still been attempted to persecute that token in terms of the ability to sell it, right? And that's the problem. We didn't lose when we were found guilty. We lost when the suit was announced. We had a chance to win when we were found guilty. But being found guilty didn't change that. We were found guilty when the suit was announced.
I mean, you're exactly right.
When the government comes after you, even if you win and you were found, you know, not guilty or whatever the equivalent of this is, it's just a matter of how much you lose when the government is involved. As soon as they set their eyes on you, it's the eye of Sauron, you lose something, whether it's time or money or part of your life or your entire life.
Or your whole business.
Yeah.
Right. But specifically, like, if we want Odyssey to be the commercial success that we think it can be, if we want library apps to be the commercial success that we think that they can be, that necessitates average, normal people being able to get in and out of the library ecosystem. And once that suit is announced, you can't do that absent being found. If we had been found completely, you know, innocent or even partially innocent, I actually think there would have been a very clear, you know, road back. There's still potentially a road back here with what the judge was saying the other day, saying it's very narrowly about us. But effectively, once the case had started, then there was no way out but through. Like, moving internationally wouldn't have helped. So that brings it to the other half of the question, which is why, you know, do it publicly. One, look, there are lots of public, you know, cryptocurrencies. So I think that if you want to go, I think it's a choice that some people make. I think it's a smart choice for some people. Speaking for myself personally, it's not, I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't live my life worrying that as soon as I make, like, an OPSEC mistake, I would, you know, be in prison or something like that. Like, I try to live my life the opposite. I'm a very transparent person. I'm very forward with what I think to the point that it bothers people. So it's just not my psychology. I'm not saying that it's therefore a correct choice. Like, I'm not saying, like, being anonymous might have been better. But for me, it's just not, I don't think it's something I can do.
Jeremy, thanks for the time tonight. Keep up the good work as you try to figure out where this thing goes from here, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about that in the near future. So we'll be in touch.
Thanks. It was great to be on. Wishing you all the best, nothing but love. And, yeah, I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good night. And, David, I know you said you had a comment further beyond the questions. Go ahead with that.
Yeah, just the one comment was Jeremy said that the on and off ramps are the big problem. Mm-hmm. As far as the on-ramp, the best way to do it is to mine Monero, because it's one CPU, one vote, and there's no ASICs involved, so any computer can do it. So mine Monero.
I get what you're saying. You're saying that somebody who wanted to acquire cryptocurrency could avoid paying cash directly to an exchange or something like that by doing a mining operation. Therefore, they would essentially be paying their electric bill or whatever the form of energy it is that they're putting into the mining, and then they get cryptocurrency out the other end that they can then use on the you know, crypto world.
I like that idea.
Correct. And nobody need know about that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I've never thought about it in that context as being an on or off ramp into, well, on-ramp, there's no way that would be an off-ramp.
It's probably the most anonymous on-ramp into crypto.
Or any cryptocurrency. I don't know if I would recommend necessarily mining Monero, because none of these are going to be cost-efficient, right? You're not going to break even in most places by mining
Monero
cryptocurrency.
Monero is one that you can mine on, I believe, just any old piece of equipment, right?
Right, but you're going to spend way more on electricity. There are other, like, X16R tokens, like Ravencoin or something like that I would recommend someone mine over Monero. But none of them are going to be cost-effective is essentially what I was getting at. Like, you're going to spend way more in electricity than you're going to get in cryptocurrency, and that's fine. I mean, privacy has a cost.
That's true. That's true. And plus, it does require some level of technical capability in order to mine cryptocurrency.
Some do. Some have a one-click miner, like Vertcoin. Don't get into Vertcoin mining, but it had a one-click miner for a very long time.
Okay.
I think Ravencoin does as well.
Yeah, but is this something your grandma can do?
No.
Okay, probably not, right? Anyway, David, thank you for the call tonight, man. I do appreciate hearing from you. We continue. Your calls and thoughts are welcome. Jessica, normally she's in Missouri. Tonight she's calling us from our very own Manchester, New Hampshire. Jessica, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I found out how pricey it is here. I can't afford to live here. I'm going to have to go back to Missouri, man. It's like, geez. In Missouri, I rented a house. I didn't own it. I rented it. It was $329 a month.
Wow.
Plus utilities and upkeep of the grounds and outside of the house. And it's like here, like a studio apartment, $1,800 a month.
Well, I mean, are you looking just in the city, or are you looking out in a more rural area?
I'm just in the city right now.
And were you in a city in Missouri as well, and you're getting a $300 apartment?
Yeah, I was in Springfield, Missouri. Is a medium. Actually, it's larger than Manchester in population and land mass. It's approximately 189,000. There's about three colleges there, and it land mass it's larger, I think, than Manchester is.
Hmm. So, I can't speak to Manchester. Go ahead.
Like a moderate size community, and it wasn't a suburb of any larger city or anything.
Yeah, I can't speak to Manchester, but I don't think there's even an apartment in Keene that costs $1,800 a month. Even like right there on Main Street, I don't think that. I mean, they can be priced.
Yeah,
probably
you can get
close.
Apartments in Keene for that much money. Really? The New Colony Mill right over at the corner up here is like $2,000 apartments, from what I understand.
Okay.
But, you know, it just depends on what you're willing to live with. I mean, there's definitely no doubt some areas of the country cost more in which to live than others. New Hampshire apparently is, you know, depending on where you go to look, on the lower end of things, according to, what is this? I don't know if this is MERIC data gathered in the third quarter of 2021. New Hampshire has the 38th lowest cost of living in the country. So, I mean, that's not bad, but that means there's another dozen states that have lower costs of living.
Where does Missouri rank on this list?
I don't have the list in front of me.
Because, I mean, it just seemed pretty good based on, you know, New Hampshire being in the number 38. Chances are good that Missouri actually has a higher cost of living.
I don't know.
But it's also true, Jessica, that, you know, you make more money in wages. And I don't know what your, you know, employment situation is, but people tend to make more in wages than they do in Missouri as well. Like, here our McDonald's starts people out at, I think, $16 an hour, and that's relatively new, but it used to be like $12, $13 an hour anyway, whereas in Mississippi, where I'm initially from, rent was certainly much cheaper. You could find a full house for $500 or $600 a month, but when you started at McDonald's, you were making $7.25 an hour.
Yeah. I guess.
So you came all the way up to New Hampshire just to look at housing prices? Why did you come up here?
I came up here to see how the winters were. If I could, like, withstand the winters, you know, then I would move here, provided I could afford it. But it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to afford it. I can withstand the winters, but
is that because you're a retired person and you're living off of a paycheck?
I'm in my late 60s. I'm retired. I'm living off of Social Security and, you know, the small pension that I have, and that's it. It's like, so it's going to be kind of, I don't want to live in government housing. So,
sure.
And in Missouri, I don't have to. But it kind of looks like in New Hampshire, I'd have to apply for and get Section 8 or some kind of crappy housing, and I don't want to do that.
Yes. Well, Jessica, I love you, and I wish it had worked out here in New Hampshire. I mean, it's not suitable for everybody, certainly. I'm glad to hear you could handle the New Hampshire winters. This one has, to be fair, this one has been pretty mild as far as winters go, but it certainly isn't
for February
everyone.
Yet.
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to be, though. Jessica, thanks for the call. Good luck. If you're looking for something to do while you're here, do you have internet access?
Yeah.
Okay, check out the Free State Project calendar. Go to FSP, is it .org? I know it's freestateproject.org. Anyway, FSP, maybe it's .com. Sorry, .org. FSP.org/calendar. And that will show you a list of things that are going on. How long are you in New Hampshire for?
Probably not very much longer. It's, I'm kind of getting homesick. And my friends are there, and I don't I'm staying with a friend right now, but, you know, I don't like new places when it's too pricey.
Sure.
Gotcha. Well, like I said, if you're looking for something to do, if you're looking to meet people, fsp.org/calendar. Thank you for the call tonight. I do appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Let's continue here. We've got Ricky in Pennsylvania. You're on Free Talk Live. Ricky.
Thank you, Brother Eden. Good evening, and good evening to you, Sister Aria.
What's on your mind tonight, Ricky?
Well, the Fair Tax Act.
Okay.
Yeah, now I thought I'd seen it all after the midterms in that first week in the House of Representatives, but I had not. Just in case anybody's not aware what the Fair Tax is, the Fair Tax Act is it's a proposed bill that is going to be brought to the floor, as ludicrous as it seems, by Representative Buddy Carter from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is the idea here is going to abolish the income tax.
Okay, that sounds good.
The estate tax and
all
abolish
right.
the payroll tax.
All sounds good so far.
Yeah, but there's problems with this. You see, here's the problem. First of all, abolish the income tax. Well, that in all, is not going to really especially help. In fact, they're looking to abolish the whole tax code now.
I'm not trying to help the government, though.
Why wouldn't it help? It would help every individual who has to deal with this stupid tax nonsense every year. They have to pour hours, if not days, of their lives into trying or hiring somebody to, you know, God knows how much money, to figure out what they have to pay these goons in tax.
Well, here's the problem with that. They're looking for the replacement of these three items. Now, in the case of the payroll tax, the majority of that's Social Security. Now, that's ludicrous because it's your money. Now, you're not going to have to pay it up front. Well, that's wonderful. But you're going to have nothing later. Okay, fine. But here's the problem. What they're looking to do to replace this with, and this is a real bill. You know, I wish I was making this up. They're looking to replace it with a 30% flat tax. Now, that tax is going to be placed on everything. Everything from a gallon of milk to food to clothing to a car, even at this point, a house. Now, the problem with this, I see, is multiple problems. Problem number one, you know, people think, oh, the wealthy ain't going to go for that. Well, they're not going to care. It's not going to make a difference because you're still going to have the same separation of the classes. Second of all, it's going to crush everybody from the middle class on down. And you're still going to obviously have your state taxes. You're going to have, like in my case, I'm going to have property tax, school tax, and sales tax.
I don't see how it's going to crush everyone from the middle class down. The more money people spend on consumer goods, like you mentioned milk and stuff like that, the more taxes they're going to pay. But they can always choose to not spend that money and not make the taxes. This is why I like the Fair Tax Act, or at least parts of the Fair Tax Act. It taxes people for spending, which discourages people from spending money, whereas the income tax penalizes people for earning money, which discourages people from earning money. I would rather discourage them from spending and encourage them to save. Mm. And the Fair Tax Act, it doesn't do that, but it's at least better in that it goes in that direction.
I think the fair we have talked about this, by the way, in recent weeks here on Free Talk Live. I think the fair tax is terrible in that I hate all taxes and that all taxes should be abolished. But I do agree with Aria that it is a slight improvement over the current situation of this incredibly complex tax code. Have you read it, Ricky?
Hmm?
Have you read the tax code, the Internal Revenue Code?
Oh, I know some things, but I mean, I've never read it cover to cover or nothing.
Okay.
How many tens of thousands of pages is it now?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know.
Anybody?
Huh?
You know?
What?
I mean, has anybody read it that's not, like, working for the IRS or anything?
Is indeed. So how could anyone be expected to follow it if they've never read it?
Well, one of the things I'm looking at that's not cool is, right now, you do pay income tax, but you can take deductions. Now they don't pay.
Can you answer my question? How are you supposed to be expected to follow something that you've never read?
Man, that silence was loud.
Well, no, that's why you take your taxes to go to somebody who knows what the hell they're doing.
Oh.
But they've never read it either.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they have. They
no,
have,
man.
How are you sure?
Every year.
There have been studies that have done this. If you take like 10 different accountants and you give them all the same information, they're going to come up with 10 different results about how much money you owe in taxes. The tax code is something like 80,000 pages or something like that. It's far too big for any human being to understand. It conflicts with itself constantly, and it's full of loopholes and shenanigans.
Vox says that's a myth, Aria. It says it's a myth that the federal tax code is 70,000 pages. It's a mere 4,000, it claims.
Only 4,000 pages of legalese. That's not really that much better.
Yeah, and that's terrible. And but good luck reading page one and understanding it, because it's always like referencing other sections, and then like you have to stop and go to the other section to read what that says. And of course, every single word has specific definitions because it's legalese. So all the words don't necessarily mean what you think they mean, because, well, in legalese, one of the rules is you can redefine words as you please. So you always have to check the definition section as well before you can even read, let alone one sentence of this code. I mean, it's called code for a reason, right? It's encoded.
Well, I mean, as an example, I figured this out. Like right now for my cell phone bill, I have a $30 bill. Of that, like $1.32 is PA sales tax. This thing where, now, this is going to die in the Senate, but it's just the audacity it's going to the floor. But that, if this thing, and it may pass, and I hope it does pass the House, so people can see, and I want to see how many votes are going, so they can see what these guys are doing. But my bill's going to go from $1.32 in tax to another $9. I'm going to be paying $40 for the same phone bill.
Yeah, I understand, and that sounds terrible when you put it in that context, but you're also not then going to be paying the property tax or the income tax or any of these other taxes.
Well, you're still going to pay property tax. You're okay. Still going to be paying school tax.
Yeah, ignore property taxes, because that's...
No, I have an issue with school tax. I don't have kids in school. You know, most of those guys rent. You know, and you pay school tax for the rest of your life. They don't.
Well, I do have an issue with paying these taxes, considering I don't have kids in school.
You know renters pay school tax, right?
Well, supposedly landlord's supposed to take care of that.
You know that's included in the rent, right?
Supposedly. Yeah. Now, that's what I don't
understand. I can guarantee you it is. No landlord is going to just make less on rent than what they're paying in taxes. They're going to charge you enough for covering the tax bill, whatever that is, and then they're going to charge you enough to cover the mortgage, whatever that is, and then they're going to charge you enough on top of that to maybe put something in the bank in case something breaks, like when your water heater goes bad or the roof starts leaking or whatever, because they're the ones that have to foot those bills. So that's where the rent money goes to. It goes to taxes, and it's a huge chunk, at least here in New Hampshire, that goes to taxes.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how it is in New Hampshire.
That's that way everywhere. Whether it's a huge chunk or not, I don't know, but it is some chunk of your rent is going to the town or city or state government.
Well, I think I would say, at least here anyway, it's small in comparison to what people pay in school taxes that have properties and things of that nature. I know, because from when I was left my property, and after a while I rented. I know. You know?
I really don't think you know. Now, are the school taxes included in the property taxes there? Is that how that works in PA?
No, property taxes are separate. And that's something I wanted to ask you about. I know, looking at it many years ago, when I was on years ago.
How do they bill the school taxes? Before you go on, how do they bill them?
What do you mean, how they bill them?
Who has to pay those?
Everybody that owns property.
Okay, so they are essentially a property tax. There's not a bill going to people directly. It's going to whoever the property owner is.
So there's an assessor that comes out and checks every now and then.
So you have both the property tax and a school tax?
Yes.
Good Lord.
I know in New Hampshire they have no school tax, but the way it used to be years ago, I don't know how it is now, used to have a very large property tax.
There's a huge property tax in New Hampshire, and about 60-70% of it goes to the schools.
Thank goodness you live in a commonwealth where the government's accountable to the people. Imagine how bad it would be if you didn't.
So
In my case, I got a small property tax, and I have a school tax that's 6 or 7 times more than what the property tax is.
So you own property?
Yes.
Okay. Are they billed on the same bill, or do they come as separate bills?
They come in separate bills because they come out different times of the year.
Is it only once a year that you have to pay the school tax?
You have to pay it by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so that's what happens is the landlord gets the school tax, they get the property tax, and they factor it into the rent. That's how they figure out, partially how they figure out the rent.
Well, there's no way in hell that, like when I was renting, that they accumulated to what I paid in school taxes. Mine actually went down in 2020. I was paying more before that.
Your rent went down?
It did go down.
Well, you're pretty unusual. A lot of people have been seeing 30 to 40% increases in their rent in just the last couple of years. So
my school tax went down. not
lucky
not
you.
The rent's sky high. You know.
Well, the tragedy there.
Huh?
The tragedy there is that even if, you know, landlords' property taxes or school taxes go down, they're not going to correspondingly drop the rent as a result of that. That's the tragedy there.
Ricky, thank you for the call tonight. Appreciate it. Let's go to Gigi in South Carolina. Gigi, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Aria.
Hi, everybody. Good evening.
Hi, Gigi.
To all of you this evening, listeners and the guest hosts.
Welcome.
Two things. Several months ago, I learned so many things listening to our beloved Reverend Captain teach us, and I emphasize the word teach, about free market economies, the true essence of capitalism, of the origins of the United States of America, and his passion for economic principles from that brilliant, brilliant economist, PhD winner. Captain, do you remember I called in and I said, as a former professor, I loved your program. You were brilliant that night.
Unfortunately, the captain is not on the show tonight. He is on Saturdays and Sundays typically, but usually not. Usually not on during the week. Yeah, it's Ian and Aria in the studio tonight.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Ian. Excuse me. You two gentlemen have a similar voice to me. But today on NPR, I was listening to a program with an economy professor who was saying exactly what the captain had taught me several months ago, and I was listening attentively and saying to myself, bravo, Captain.
Okay, but what was
and
it that
it
you
was
learned?
Yes, it was the program on NPR, Eastern Standard Time here in Charleston at 2 p.m. called Think Out of Texas. And an economy professor was speaking. I don't remember the woman's name, but she was discussing every detail that the captain taught us.
Which was? What was it?
About free market economies, free market principles, true capitalism, no government regulations,
wow,
no government interference.
I'm surprised they put that on NPR.
I beg your pardon?
I said I'm surprised they put that message on
NPR. Yes, sir. 2 p.m. here in Charleston,
wow,
on my local NPR.
Well, we do love the captain here. Thank you, Gigi, for the call tonight. Appreciate it. Yeah, and free markets, always a good thing. NPR, though, I mean, you wouldn't expect those commies to be airing information like that.
I certainly would not.
The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Coming up, Florida teachers are hiding books to avoid felony charges. We'll talk about that coming up.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.